You're listening to Red Nation Online.
Lamar Nagel scores his second of the night to give DC United in the lead.
He's inside this time, he plays a lovely ball. Nagel makes a fantastic run,
Saturday, October 1st, is Steve Perry, honors out of Rosny. I'm Ian Clark. We're back from BMO Field and watching TFC's postseason pole position slip away after a 2-1 loss to DC United. It's been a poor home stretch with points dropped as the Giovanculus side have struggled to impose themselves with a home field advantage. We discuss the key players in the loss, goals scored for and against, and close out by weighing in on the South End's return as the 12th man and what their importance is to the club now and moving forward. All that and more on the next 45 minutes on Eastside Stand Up.
Corrections from the editor.
Call what?
Faux pas.
Okay.
Yeah. Faux pas. Ian Clark.
Okay, so here we are. It's the R&O Stretching Studios. We're going to have amazing core strength after this game.
I'm in pigeon pose right now.
Is that what it's called?
Well, this isn't. Oh. They don't know I'm not in pigeon pose. It's the beauty of radio.
What do you want me to say?
Radio with this audio.
No, but
let's get on the treadmills.
We're all sitting on what are these called? Rubber balls.
Yeah.
Well, it's just Pilates.
Pilates balls. Ones that you used to play with them when you were a kid in the 80s and 90s, and they just turned into core strength exercises.
Yeah, it's the rage at offices now. You sit on these balls for chairs, right?
Yeah.
It's good for your back and your core strength.
Your whole shift at the
See lots of these guys who just sit on the ball or it's an alternative to the raised desk, I guess.
So after this, our backs will feel great, guys.
Because no more lower back.
God knows I don't feel great after this fucking shitty 2-1 loss to DC United.
Ride home for an hour. This isn't.
Well, guys, as we said, Toronto FC, 2-1 loss.
Lose at home,
Lose at home.
Mm-hmm.
It's been
a home stretch. If I could use the alliteration.
And if we look at the last few games, it has not been an overly impressive run since this podcast got back on a regular schedule. But even going back to when you guys were at the Montreal game when I was away, yeah. I mean that was a loss. We have the Red Bulls game that they fought back for a 3-3 draw. Philadelphia Union 1-1 draw, and then midweek against one of the worst teams in the league, letting the most amount of goals we cannot score, 0-0 draw against Orlando. That one is like awful, and here we are with a loss. Okay, so let's start.
So the question I ask, the renewals are up for next year's seats, and if you renew as of yesterday, you get options for playoff tickets. Playoff. But what option is that if there's not a chance to make it into the playoffs? Like it looks like it was a for sure thing weeks ago that we were in the playoffs, first place in the division,
or in a home game for sure
now
too.
We've dropped to third place after tonight's game, and I think there's five spots, right? There's like
six now. No, six.
Six. Okay, well, maybe we can't drop that far. I don't know.
But I think it's a home game.
The home game is what we're
fishing for. So we wouldn't see them, possibly.
No. Well, yeah, exactly.
What else is new?
So was it smart to rest Giovinco is the question that's on everyone's mind.
Well, I think that's the gamble. That's the thing that Toronto FC's been hedging their bets on, that they haven't. They could do that. They wouldn't need him.
Because the talk was that he was fit for tonight's game. But they didn't dress him. He wasn't even on the substitute list.
Yeah, we talked about that last week. I mean, I wouldn't play him at all. If we're mathematically.
Are we going to regret this?
No, I don't think so. I think there's enough manpower on there that can. Should be able
to. Do you think so?
I do.
After watching the last few games, we're going to hold you to that one.
This is one of the few times I'm positive. And I feel that with a little
like
more.
Like down the stretch, yes. But, yeah. but tonight, looking at the lineup, I was like, whoa.
Hamilton didn't start.
We were struggling. Yeah, but he was great when he came on.
Yeah.
I mean, his first touch on the ball was like this long ball that he brought down and almost scored on.
Didn't we say that he's probably a better sub than he is a starter? So maybe he got a little scolding and now he's, you know, they put him in later in the game.
Yeah. So hold on. I want you to answer that point we said. It's like, are we going to regret this? You're saying we're not going to regret.
This is TMZ. Am I not? Are we going
to
regret?
Yeah, I want to circle back to you because you were on a train of thought there.
Yeah, sorry.
That's okay. Remind me what the hell I was talking about.
Well, I think the question was, are we going to regret not having put Jovinko in any of these games?
I don't think so. I think if you have him rested, you have to stay in Ricketts. If he's healthy and rested, you're going to have two powerhouses coming, or at least really good players, along with our other really good players, i.e. Altidor and Bradley, and we're going to have them in the playoffs. And then even if we don't play at home, that's fine. I don't care. I personally couldn't care less about that stuff. If we're at home, great. As long as we make a run in the playoffs, beggars can't be choosers here. It's not a surprise that we're kind of dropping the ball, no pun intended, in the last few games. But we're going to rest Giovinco. I trust in that, and he'll come out stronger and healthy. That's all that matters.
Okay, so I actually would say I agree with you, except that I think that he should get at least one game in before they go into the playoffs, because then he needs to get back into sort of the game space, headspace, right? Because I think going cold into the playoffs might be maybe too much of a risk. However, you're right. Risky, like if they put him in and he got injured, then we would have undone everything and possibly totally screwed our chances in the playoffs, right? And it's at this point, it's how we finish in the playoffs. It's like it'll be the playoffs and how you do every game from there.
I think Vanny is so under pressure of not having him injured for the playoffs. And that pressure is coming from everywhere.
And also doing better than losing first game in the playoffs, which was our record last year, which was our best record to date as a franchise. So
a 3-0 loss in the first round of the playoffs.
They are trying to improve on that, like regardless of whether they don't do well. I mean, at some points they feel unstoppable when all cylinders are firing, which is the point that I guess they hope to get to by the playoffs, right? So they're timing it, right? But like that's what you're saying.
Yeah. Would you want to be the coach that bring in Giovinco and then he
gets injured
20 minutes in, he's screwed, and then that's screwed. We're losing him for the rest of the season,
and we do worse. Right. Yeah, for
he's
sure.
He's our bread and butter. So
no, for sure, yeah. I can see how this is a calculated risk. Fuck, watching them tonight was like I was joking with you that it was retro Saturday, right? Because it felt like some of this gameplay was borrowed from years of the past.
Quite a few long balls,
less fireball, lots of long balls, and we got tons of chances that we didn't finish on, right? It just felt like fucking frustration, like just watching this team. And you know, DC scored two goals, and I think they only had two chances on net. And I was thinking, whoa, those odds are fucking great. Like, they don't need much to damage us, and we need a whole lot to fucking just make any kind of dent with.
Yeah, and I would say
with the lineup we had tonight.
Yeah, because I thought that, you know, we lose 2-1, and from my side, a lot of disappointment and frustration. But then looking back at that game, I mean, it's not like we didn't have our opportunities to either tie or win that game, right? Like it wasn't like there wasn't the final ball to create the chance that should have been the goal. There was a handful of chances in the second half that were clear-cut, you know, opportunities on goal that we just kicked it right at the keeper.
Even in the first half. I want to, like, there was some key things.
Well, let's talk about this Giovinco-less performance from the top.
Well, I want to say that, like, there's other things that happen in this game. So Osorio, I want to start with him, if I could. Guy shy on the trigger, and to our detriment. Within the first 9 minutes, he had two great chances on net where he just didn't shoot. And I was like, buddy, fucking get your balls together, man, and just take a shot. Like, you just got to take a shot. So
the confidence
in Osorio continues to be an issue. And I'm thinking, when is this guy ever going to get the courage to shoot? I mean, by the end of the, he was shooting, but fuck, it took like the whole game for him to warm up to this. And I just thought, like, you got to take your chances all game, not just at the end, like when you need it, right? Like, you can't be panicking. The Montreal game was like the turning point, right? That's where Giovinco gets this is the turning point in the season. That Montreal game during the exhibition, and that's where Giovinco goes down. He gets injured, and you know, that's then we see the undoing of our lineup and our string of good play. But also, after he got injured, the whole game it looks like, oh, we were all over Montreal. We should have beat them handily. We couldn't finish. And as the game crept on, we started panicking. And you saw this team scramble and scramble, even though we were like well in control of this game. Montreal got like a quick counterattack goal, and we lost. It was just like, that's what it felt like a bit tonight. If it was a bit of a rerun.
Yeah, I echo that. I mean, we've seen that in the first half of that Philly game, and tonight they still like the whole confidence thing surprises me. I mean, just more shooting. The second half, everybody in 120 where I was sitting was just like, shoot, taking too many touches.
You can hear it.
Just shoot the ball. That's what you want. Yeah. You want to. I don't care if we have 40 shots. Try to get them on net. Do your best. Get close. Shoot. Maybe a rebound will happen. Maybe something will happen. Too many touches. I mean, it's endemic today.
But they did get their chances. I mean, they outshot and out.
In the first half, I feel the chances were more clear cut.
Yeah, perhaps.
But in that second half, DC really started clogging that defense. They really were protecting that 2-1 lead. And Toronto just needed to keep shooting or trying to. I mean, Endo had a couple of crosses. I'm glad that when Endo come on, but we'll get to that anyway.
We'll get to that. Yeah, that's
so I want to say, so I'm not finished because Babouli is my next sore thumb. And I felt like he couldn't actually control the ball well. At least with his touches, so his passes were terrible. When he was doing passes to space, they were way too, like, it was just like, you're too ambitious, man.
Yeah, they're bad.
And
Cooper too.
Sometimes he held onto the ball too long. Other times, like, I just felt like he looked great when he was carrying the ball, but everything he did after like his play to the play, like, it was off, and I was just like, he should have come out way earlier.
A lot of flicks and no one.
And you said last game, yeah, that's what I'm saying. They were to space, right? So a player was running on, but, you know, got outpaced because it was just way too far, right? It's just, that's what I'm saying. It's overly ambitious. It was an overly ambitious to space ball. And that happened twice, at least twice. Also bad touches when he was receiving the ball. And then just like he held onto the ball and painted himself in corners where then they would just turn it over because he couldn't, there was no play to make, right? So I just felt like, fuck, he's not adding to any, like, he's taking away from our attacking. We need somebody else in there who's got something else to give. And you were saying that last game, Jordan Hamilton.
Last weekend against Philadelphia.
It was Hamilton who started and was not having a good game, and Babouli came in with some spark and flair. Mm-hmm. So when Hamilton came in, fantastic, like his first ball touch, that long ball. So I'm like, oh, here comes a fucking long ball. And then we thought he was offside. He brings it down. The flag doesn't go up, and he gets a shot on net, and I was just like, what the fuck? It was just like he would have been a hero if that went in. And he had quite a few chances, and I thought, well, today he showed his stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, stuff that I've never seen from him, so it was fantastic. And so I want to say one of the bright spots was the man of the match. Armando Cooper, right?
Yeah.
Armando Cooper. I've never seen him before. You don't like him? Well, I mean, he does some flips, but...
A couple of, like, okay, really poor passes in the midfield, maybe two or three.
People complain about his dropping, though, and I will say that, you know... Eventually, the rest going to catch on. So you can't keep dropping. That can't be your play, right? But, like, he had these flicks that were just, like, fantastic, beautiful things, and gave beautiful balls and had some chances of his own. Like,
his goal-scoring chance was amazing.
Like, the dribbling through, like, he dribbled through by three players where you just – and you thought he was walking, and these guys were just, like, mesmerized by him. It was just like a talisman, just kind of like – so in some ways, he – I don't know, mesmerize the team, right?
He's quick, I'll give you that. He's quick and he's fast.
I think he's got more
He needs to play more. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, this is the first time he started a game. Am I wrong?
I think he started against Orlando.
So, I mean, he needs more adaptation. Yeah. He needs to adapt more to the MLS. And there's a couple, like, you saw a lot of good things. I mean, on our end, he was giving away a lot of, like, he gave two or three. I was like, well, I don't understand what he's doing.
Yeah.
But he's fast. And I think Toronto. Like, Babouli's fast, Endo's fast. They kind of add pace.
I think if you would have countered him with Giroud, it would have been a different story because Giroud would have been able to be the cleanup guy, and he could just play. He could play offensive because he can give that flair to the offense and make the chances, right? And then you can have somebody like Benoit Giroud doing that stuff. But Bradley, I mean, because Giroud wasn't on the pitch, Bradley had to do that, so he couldn't play offensively, which is, I think, sort of. took away from our striking power and then sort of left too big of a gap between him and Altidore to get the ball up. And Babouli, when he got the ball, he just lost it. So I think that was our thing. There was no linkage. There was no good linkage between the midfield and the forwards.
They did that with Torsten Frings, too. Yeah. For some reason, the big guys who are really, like, they like going forward and bombing forward and shoot. Whenever they play for Toronto, they sit them back.
And I didn't think our defense needed the support tonight, actually, because I think they held their own mostly. I mean, sure, they only had two, but they only had two chances, really. I mean, I felt like they were strong though, and I don't think they got outplayed. And I think Bradley could have just left them to be and gone forward.
A couple times I noticed
maybe he made the wrong decision by playing back.
The defense pushed forward a lot, and I remember in that first half they were up like press.
But they do that every game, and I think that's
that diamond, I guess.
It's just like the wing back, right? It's like ever since Roberto Carlos did the wing back thing, now it's like it's a play, right? I mean, it's been like since Marvell Wynn. Marvell Wynn used to do that all the time in the first year, right?
Love Marvell Wynn. Yeah, he's just fucking bomb.
Yeah,
he's beautiful.
It added an extra dimension to our attack, and I think it's always been part of our play. Like even Ashton Morgan, like last year, and like you see Morrow and Bloom, he had like two fantastic chances in the first half. Like
scoring, he shots on goal.
At one point, I said to you, all our attacks are coming from the defense. Anything that's like been on the scoreboard here or like highlight reel is like it was Bloom and Morrow, and I was just like, what? And Morrow, 100th game. Third player to be the 100th game.
Yeah.
Two of them from defense. So Ashton Morgan being the other one of the other 100th player game, other men who played the 100 games. I don't know who the third is, but...
Osorio.
So
Stephen Fry sat on 99. Should have had 100.
Yeah.
They really...
But they're fucked in.
They really...
the list. That's the wall of...
They really gave him the shaft on that one. He should have had it, too. There's no reason why he shouldn't have played that last game. Anyways, where do we want to circle around to, guys? Should we talk? Should we walk through this game at all? And we've kind of given thought on some of the key players of this roster or this lineup.
We can talk about changes. So you wanted to talk about Endo a bit, and I think that he did add some dimension to the. He added some width to when he was coming, so he was getting balls and crossing them through. The first one was terrible, but then like he learned from that, and then the next couple were just like they were on the money. Like Hamilton had a header that was just
pretty much a clean header.
Yeah. I mean, he was a little bit too close to the near post, and I think that's kind of his position was off. But like, at least he connected right and. And it got like a certain got service to somebody, right? So I thought, oh, it's getting better. It's going to come. And he kept on getting balls, and they kept on feeding. It was working. I thought, like, I just think that they waited too long to sub him in. Like, it was just he only had 15 minutes, and I'm just like, fuck. How do you get ready? Like, how do you get into this game with only 15 minutes?
It looked promising.
Sure.
Before he came on, I mean, I remember commenting with my brother that I thought that for sure that
they were gonna
draw it even before he came on, but.
Yeah, for sure. And I thought they should be bringing him in. I just thought they should have brought him in earlier.
Well, Ivani must have been like, oh, let's see what happens.
Well, I thought the first substitution was bizarre, right? Well, no, it was was it Hamilton that came in first?
Haglund.
It was Haglund. Yeah. Haglund, that was the, yeah.
So they switched formation. They kind of switched formation.
Lovitz had a chance, too. He had a far post chance that just was like, that was the Cooper ball that went through. And nobody touched it. And it went like right across the six-yard box. And I'm just like, is that ball really going to go all the way through? And Lovitz just missed it. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
And we were like, just get there.
Well, here's two things. Before we get into that, do we want to go over the goals?
Okay.
Do you want to discuss the goals? Yeah, I mean, sure. we haven't kind of like cut through this minute by minute, but we are kind
We went up first, right?
Yeah, we did. And we were saying how this was a Jozy Altidore. It was a carbon copy from the last week against Philadelphia.
And it was also a carbon copy from my play that happened 2 minutes prior. Where he fed the ball to Bloom, and then I guess Bloom couldn't get it off, right? So, and then you were like, you made the comment, I wish he would be selfish with it. So he did. This next play, he was selfish with it. He beat the one player, and then he beat the goalkeeper, and beautiful goal.
Yeah, that's what I was up to the point where
he was being held in that section. When he went in, he jumped in the supporter section. That was nice to see.
Yeah.
And they were holding him up. Like his feet were off the ground. It was fantastic.
Because they weren't silent. You know how they were going to be silent for this game, right?
Yeah, well, we should talk about that.
Well, I think we should say that for a second. Okay, we will talk about that. But I did want to say the thing that I noticed about Jozy, and that this game was he was being so selfless, and he was being this, like, playing this sort of team role of the, you know, the back to goal forward and whatever. And this game was just calling out for someone just to be selfish and take it himself. And I mean, the play that he scored on was that was it. I mean, Josie picks it up. He goes 1v1 first, beats his man 1v1, rounds the keeper and scores a goal. Whereas last week it was more like he got a great pass, rounded the keeper, and then hit it off the outside of the post or just outside of the net and didn't get it in. So that to me was a great thing to see, that Josie was able to finish a play that he couldn't last week.
It was another example of people learning in the role, right? Like, I mean, it was just like, okay, he fucked it up last week, but he finished it this week, right? So that was good.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, that lead was short-lived, literally minutes later. Now, this is the thing that I thought that we saw. So we saw this play unfold in front of us, Steve, and I was seeing online people were talking about it. Obviously, after the goal, Clint Irwin was irate, and a few of the guys on TFC were kind of giving the referee an earful. And I think a lot of people were thinking that he was calling the goal scorer was might have been offside on the play. But what I saw was it was earlier. It was like the ball went out, and to me it looked like Lloyd Sam didn't leave the zone, and the ball came back to him. And he looked like he was offside, and then Sam knocked the ball into the 18 or the top of the 18, ball rattles around, and then it gets to another player who knocks it over to Nagel to score. So it would have, I mean, like a couple passes back was where I thought there was an offside.
And we have a unique advantage because we actually sit on that line. We are parallel with, like, we can see that back end line in the north section. So, I mean, I missed the play. I can't say. I don't know. I'm trusting that you saw it.
It's one of those plays where it was like,
we tried to find an instant replay on it.
Yeah, and we couldn't.
Because we only saw the goal.
Yeah, and I think that's because people thought that Trumsey was getting upset about that being the offside. I think they saw that it was Sam who was the guy who was offside, and it was one of those things
that's
where
people started screaming.
Yeah, and that's where it's one of those things where it's like, okay, I wasn't staring at him, but when the ball knocked up, it's like the defensive line was so far away. He didn't track back and then cut forward. He was facing his team, so it wasn't like he circled around. You know what I mean? Like he was, you know, on the shoulder of the last defender. He just never left the zone. So I was like, that's fucked. How did they miss that? That's what I saw. Again, unless I go back up and watch the game again and see if that was in fact the case, I can't be 100% sure. But that's, I think, what Irwin was getting bent out of shape about.
And then there was the discrepancy where Josie Altidore near the end of the game was offside, and they're like, oh, you called that. Yeah. Did you just figure out your whistle now? Like, that's what people were saying in our section.
Yeah, and there was an offside that was like a much closer call than what it looked like the other one was.
It didn't look like it was offside, so I don't know.
You know, we went into the half at 1-1, you know, to go through this, to just round off the three goal-scoring chances. And then both of DC's goals, though, were like just, they're kind of junk. You know, they weren't, you just expect better. And Nagel's, his other goal was just like, how did he cut through all our defenders and then fire it off his body?
I do think it was a nice goal. And
I mean, it was, yeah. But
the thing is, it was unexpected because it was a shot from distance, right? And you just thought, oh, we can handle it. But the keeper was off his line. It was perfectly placed so that it was over and dropping into the top corner. And I mean, I was like,
it's too easy.
I mean, it was, but it's not. That's a hard shot to take. It's a hard shot to take. It was too easy for us to let him give the time, like to give him the time. Like someone should have. Like where was the defender then? And I think that's when they were. So that was at the 57th mark. They hadn't actually made any changes yet. So they actually hadn't fucked around with their back line where the like Morrow comes up and they weren't trying to figure out stuff. So it was actually like there was no excuse for it. I don't know.
But, you know, this isn't the first time we've seen this. I mean, no. Philadelphia had a tear, like a goal like that, that you're thinking, how did they do it? And then against New York, I mean, New York, who do you mark on New York? Bradley Wright Phillips, full stop. And there was plays where he was isolated, or had no one even near him. And we saw that in that game, we saw it the following week, and then we saw it this week. There's something going on where it's just the breakdowns that our back line is happening. It's just
good defense. Strong midfielders.
But we've this season given up fewer goals, I think, than we have any season.
That's great.
I think we have an additional element where they're also great attackers. Like they're also in the mix for corners and often on the end of the play, right? They're often, getting some kind of a chance in there. Totally. So,
we're very much attack minded team.
I think they're attacking defenders, but
that's nice.
But they're not getting caught, right? They're not, like, it's not that they're overstretched. Somehow they make it work. So I don't want to take too little away from them. I think they actually deserve a lot more credit than people dish at them. And the problem is that, like, defenders, when they make a mistake, and it leads to a goal, then it's, like, disastrous, right? Like, they get more criticism than they deserve. That's all I'm going to say.
Well,
because when you see their fault, it usually costs us a lot more in the end, right?
It usually costs us a lot more.
But
that's an important point.
But I want to say one thing. There was probably three or four more mistakes that led to the ball getting to that player before that happened.
True. It's never just isolated.
It's never one person that's that fault for a goal.
But that's the reality. That DC second goal should not have happened because they should have closed them down. Yeah. I mean, that's defending 101.
Yeah.
It's just defending 101. Yeah. So I respect your opinion when you're saying they're go bombing in, they're doing all that good stuff. But I think the core defensive problems with TFC for the last 10 years has always been not really working on the basics. And for whatever reason, we get caught out in the basics. And great, not everybody's going to have a good day. And I get that. But if this is a chronic problem and we lose games like this, then I think that needs to be addressed and looked at. Mm-hmm. We can have all the money and we can have attacking, bombing, forwards. That's great, but you can still do your job that's your job.
Yeah, somebody should have had him. Somebody should have picked him up. But what I'll say in their defense, for the defense, is that
that was a good one.
Is that it was a shot from distance.
But
he was outside the 18.
So or at the top.
Whenever it's at the 18, it's at the 18, I'm saying, okay, they're taking a desperation shot now, right? Because usually, if you have a good chance, you're going to be inside the 18. So the 18 is sort of the last, is like where I say, okay, it's a 50-50. Uh-huh. Like, the keeper should have this. Like, you know, if the guy's taking a shot from the keeper should have it, right?
Yeah. But the keeper was off his line.
Yeah, he was.
Which... that was the goal last week against Philadelphia. The guy lofted it over Irwin.
From
the same spot. Right,
from the same spot. He's got a point. That goes back to why I don't like Irwin.
I was noticing that he was playing like Neuer. I was finding that he was trying to get really into the mix. He was really coming out as a sweeper keeper. He's playing as a fifth defense, and
which is I've never seen him really do that before.
I've never seen it either. Yeah. It was odd for me. I'd never seen it before. I was like, he's doing this
maybe
a lot.
Maybe it's because they're seeing flaws in the defense and they need that extra help. Because Bradley comes back and helps a lot, then they need someone like Irwin to kind of push up and then, you know, catch those loose balls.
Or maybe they're relying more on their defense to play offense.
Perhaps.
And they're trying to compensate.
And you need that. You need – because if you're playing too far deep towards the opposing goal and you get caught, that counters really fast, especially with a good team, right? Yeah. So that keeper needs to be on his toes.
Yeah, but unfortunately we didn't get caught on counters.
No, it's true.
That's what I'm thinking, but it wasn't the case in this instance.
Toronto's definitely working on something.
They are.
It's kind of weird that's late. I mean, it goes back to that whole identity thing we talked about last week. I mean, they're still trying and experimenting.
Yeah.
But do you really want that to happen like 4 weeks before the playoffs?
It's okay. They need to try all sorts of things, I think.
This
is the time to experiment.
Yeah.
And you need to experiment with your bench because you don't know when you're going to have to rely on them.
And you know what? Here's the reality about MLS is, in fact, finishing first is not – it's not always the – it's not important. It's not always the best thing. Right, and it's how many times have we seen a seventh or eighth place team get to the MLS Cup Finals? Many times since we've been in this league, it's happened with regularity. So it's just a matter of, as we've said before, you got to get hot at the right time, which sometimes only happens a week or two before the playoffs start. So, you know, as much as I think, you know, we look at the recent run we've had, like since I guess the Montreal game, and there is a definite pattern that's emerged. Until Jovinko, I think, slots back into that starting 11 and we kind of get everyone back into the roster, I think. But you do want to see that. You know what I mean? Like, you want to see the game against Montreal and the game against Chicago. I hope that it's Jovinko starts those games. Ricketts is available for that game. You know, Cooper's in that game. We have Cheru. We have Johnson. All the guys that you want in the mix.
Yeah, on paper, that's exciting.
Right? Like, yeah, on paper, that's... that's our team. You expect, and that's something that you want, or you can say, yeah, that's a good team and a definite contender. But my concern
I will say on the pitch, that's exciting. It's not just academic. I mean, they play well. All of those guys, that's good chemistry. They got good chemistry.
Have we seen Cooper play with?
Not Cooper.
He's sort of the odd man out.
He's the new man in, really.
So we haven't seen him with Jovinko yet. Haven't seen Ricketts much with him either. Exactly. But what we have seen with Ricketts and him has been flashes of excitement. So
is he back? Do you think he's back next for the Montreal game?
Who?
Ricketts.
Yes, he's just on a red. So he got a red card against Orlando. So, I mean, I think the only concern that I would still put on this team is if a team comes out and finds a way just to completely shut out Jovinko. That's still, I think, a concern.
That's happened.
It has happened. And Montreal did it. Montreal did it two games in a row last year. And that's the thing that's like, okay, Toronto is going to figure, because someone else is going to have to step up.
It happened this year too, but it happened when we had lots of injuries and Jovinko was the only player on the field. Right? Like that was going to cause damage. So I think
we didn't have Altidore.
Right after Copa America.
But with all that... With all that other firepower that you just listed off, I think it's different. It's a different story because there's too many people to cover. Then they got a markman, and you can't mark two players on one guy getting the ball. And you know, enough of those guys are good enough that like it doesn't matter. Jovinko can take two guys away, and actually it'll lighten up the pitch it'll even work even more in our favor.
Cooper Ricketts. Fast players.
We'll have space to play in, right? So
I would love to see Toronto, a super offensive team, in a good way.
They have been. I think they have been, and I think we're going to see that maybe in the last two games. Yeah. So
this is clinical.
This is maybe a sacrificial game.
Yeah, maybe.
Right?
That's a good way to that's a good way to spin it.
Because if we're trying all these new things and key players out,
transition out and maybe into some sights and sounds, or the one sight and sound. And I think there's an interesting way to tie it in, Steve, because we started this podcast all kind of noting that it was the Montreal game that was the beginning where we got to this point.
Yeah.
And funny enough, if this sight and sound began in that game as well.
Yeah, it did, right.
Because this what we saw.
I didn't know this happened, so you should explain the context. There was like a sign that went up, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know it. Tell me the story.
Oh, okay. So I mean, Andre knows about it. We've mentioned a little bit on the podcast.
My brother was at that game.
Yeah, and we didn't. Oh, yeah, it was your brother. We didn't dig into it here.
You were at that.
But the listener,
we were sitting at that game.
The listener knows about this because it was a big thing out there. But obviously, there was a two stick that went up. That was
small too.
Yeah, and it was offensive, right? And rightly so, that people called it out and pointed it out.
What was it? I don't know what it was. What was
it? Well, it was
Montreal sucks.
And it was sexually explicit.
It was sexist.
It was completely sexist. That's what it was. Okay, so, and then what happens is in the fallout of it, they're trying to figure out who this person was, what section they were in, et cetera. And it was in, I think it was 115, which is inebriati, probably the most voracious and loud and passionate group this year and has been leading the charge. So obviously people kind of pointed to them, I guess, to sort of say like, what is this? But turns out he wasn't part of their group, but he was in their section. The guy was identified. I think he was dealt with. However, the FO decided to say that since this was in your section, we're going to put sanctions on your group. You can't have flags, da 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 da. And as this sort of dragged out,
which is a really heavy-handed approach to this, and maybe you could say MLSE is trying to learn from this too, but like I think it was kind of like using a sledgehammer in the wrong way.
They do everything,
but they destroy the spirit. Like the whole thing, they co-opt the spirit part of this, like from the supporter sections, and then they just try and destroy. Then they go and destroy it.
It's about control.
But I don't think they realize that it is about control. But I don't think they realize that they're shooting themselves in the foot every time. What was the sanction that they did? Sorry, what was it?
Well, the sanction was they were like, I should say, I haven't reached out to these guys. I haven't spoken to them. But my understanding of like reading different things on Twitter was that, these are like your flags. You obviously don't get any flags because it fell apart in parcel. Now there's stuff that happened after. So they started, I think what happened was they were starting to say, okay, we're not going to – you take this away.
Well, you said last game, no one cheered.
Right. Yeah, I'm getting to that.
Sorry.
So, they sort of said, okay, well, we're just going to – if you're not going to let us support the team the way that we do, then we're just going to sit here and not support them. And then as things kind of started dragging out, what started to come out – and the funny, interesting thing was that there was an incident in San Jose where these two guys lit off – or someone let off smoke flares, like unauthorized ones. Like if the club has their sanctioned smoke bombs, but in San Jose, these guys let them off. They couldn't identify who did it. So they put a ban on the entire supporter group in San Jose. Funny enough, in Toronto now, over the past week or whatever, Bill Manning, our team president, and the FO there started putting together this, I don't know if it was a contract or something with the supporters group, that they were going to kind of implement this rule in the South End where it was, you know, if someone comes into your section or whatever and violates team rules and we can't identify who it is, then the supporter group is going to be penalized for it, which is ridiculous because then it puts them in a situation where...
So they're going to be penalized by taking away their flags again or whatever? Like,
yeah, or
restricting how they cheer, I suppose.
Things like that.
Which is ridiculous. It's just counterintuitive, really, from a marketing sense and from every kind of... Like, sorry, continue because... I'm still learning. I'm just getting irate.
So. Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely something to be irate about. So, I mean, I'm trying to cut to the chase because there was some really, really good points about this idea or this thought that they had, because it's like a supporter or a supporters group. I mean, they're
asked to self-police.
Yeah. And it's like you hire security guards. Like that's their job. Their job should be to identify these kind of things and deal with it. It shouldn't be on the supporters group. And I can't think of any instance where a supporter group has shielded someone in their section from doing these ridiculous things. You know, when the guy went up to that news reporter and said the offensive thing in her ear, everyone was all over that guy to identify who he was, where he was sitting, whatever. And the section that he was in, I mean, if I'm not mistaken, it was in Red Patch Boys, and everyone was talking about it on that forum and identifying who that was. And same thing with this guy that held up this two-stick. I mean, there's just no way in this day and age that someone is not going to find out who that was. I mean, everyone's got a phone. Everyone's shooting video or whatever. Yeah. It's up. And that guy's face was up on Twitter within a day. And someone was finding out who he was, et cetera, et cetera. So what people were identifying is that the whole incident is a red herring. It's just about the club trying to find an excuse to implement these rules that they know are horseshit and to get a clampdown on the kind of support that they want to see in the South End, which is not like it's not supporter run. They want it to be club controlled.
I don't think it's necessarily that. I think they don't want to recreate an offensive thing like what happened, right? They don't want to recreate sexist banners going up, right? I mean, it was a taunt, right? So it was really slanted against Montreal. It was like Montreal sucks, wasn't it? Or something like that. So I think we should say what it was. They just don't want it to happen again, but I think they're going about it the wrong way. They're asking them to self-police a group that fans that come in. Not only do they pay, but they go the extra mile to build the spirit in the stadium. It's kind of ridiculous. It's like it's a slap in the face, you know, just pouring water on the fire.
Yeah.
You know, in the way that, like, the fire is the thing that's, like, engineering this whole cheering thing that's going on, and they're putting it out. And right. It's just, like, it's a counterintuitive. It's really using a sledgehammer to... I don't have the right metaphor, but it's overkill is what it is, right?
Throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
It's ridiculous.
And it's like, and the thing that's fucking obnoxious about it is the game that happened in, they have no problem putting up that huge TIFO in the marketing videos that they have playing at halftime at the start of the game.
I noticed that, yeah.
Right? So they have no problems showing these amazing flags and this amazing TIFO they did. But then they're like, oh, no. We're gonna tell you how to do this. And of course, like on this podcast, you know, it's a sore spot because of where we sat, and it used to be a fun place to be. And as you know, where it's like, you know, if we ever brought in a flag or a banner or stood up, we'd be out on our ear. Yeah, however, the club can unfurl a banner in our section during the middle of a game,
interrupt what we're
and block the view of us.
Yeah.
And you know what? Just to throw one thing, you know what really here's this is my actually I call this my Peter Griffin segment. You know what really grinds my gears? When people in the media who've never paid a fucking dollar for a season ticket has the balls to say shit about how supporters should behave.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
And people probably know who I'm talking about, but I'm going to circle. I'm throwing two people in this because there was someone at the last playoff game of last year when Toronto shat the bed. And on the television, they were saying, oh, you know, supporters should be hasty when they talk about Vanny, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, you know what? You've never paid a dollar. Yeah. You get paid to watch this team. And then again, there was an article that came out and that you get paid to watch this team. And you're telling like supporters like what they should and shouldn't be doing. I mean, just
it's a bit too much like PR for the club. And honestly, people are upset and they should be venting it. And the club should hear it. They need to hear the criticism because they're not getting it from their internally.
Yeah. And I should say the Toronto Star actually wrote a balanced and decent article about what was going on. And that was like, okay, this one makes sense. But it's like when someone tries to, you know, say this is what you guys should and shouldn't do, I'm just like, go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
Go fuck yourself. You know what I mean? Like,
you're a bit too close to the club.
Yeah.
They're saying that.
Yeah. So
it's not balanced for sure.
No. So anyways, there's the rant that we want to throw out there. And, you know, some people, I guess, didn't want to touch this whole thing, but I was like, I don't care. I mean, this podcast has been pretty open.
But it seems like they've sorted things out.
Okay. Oh, right. There's the case. Here's the. Yeah. Okay, let's close this off.
Bradley and Altidore, what do they say?
Yeah.
Because they go up.
Anyways, the close is. So that was the name, but that was.
Wait,
so
no,
hold on.
No. They're not watching the video.
Okay, so anyways, to circle this off was that at the start of the game.
Yeah.
The flags were out.
And we were like, what's going on?
They're cheering.
Right. So.
But they weren't cheering last week, right?
No. And all the supporters groups were actually, rarely, all supporters group were together, united, in solidarity with one another, saying
when
like.
When I came in, they were all wearing black.
That group always wears black.
Okay. I just wanted to.
Yeah. Okay. So there's the caveat that we should throw out there, because by the time this podcast is live, I think you may have heard what there must have been some sort of concession with the front office with these groups and what has happened. So we basically just gave you the backstory and our feelings about it. And now to bring you up to speed, today's game, they were all out in full force. And it was back to the way it was weeks ago.
And with new songs, which were fantastic, actually. I just want to say I loved them, and they were long, and they were in depth and detailed and coordinated. And I just thought, fuck, they are so good. MLSE doesn't know what they have. That's all I'm going to say. Well, they don't appreciate what they've got.
It's just unbelievable.
When have they?
It's unbelievable that they would say, you know, we were sitting here and they do the long clap, and you're like, well, whatever. But it's like, it's a great thing to get the whole stadium together and on the same page.
Yeah.
And you sit there and you go, yeah, we don't need this. Right? Yeah. We don't need this, obviously. Because, you know, this is what the front office obviously wanted.
But the renewal marketing ad that they showed today is the long clap as the background song. It's the back. Did you notice that?
Yes.
They stole it. Yes.
Well, you know what, Bradley went to the press, and I read the article today. And Bradley said, look, we support you guys. I think there was a bit of conflict between the club and the players and kind of what they had maybe had differing opinions on it. And I'm not entirely sure, but that's kind of what it looked like on paper. And Bradley said, look, we need you to be loud. This is such an important time to be a TFC supporter and a player, and we want to make a good push for you. And so that is why that was symbolic, that Altidore scores this goal and runs into the open arms of the masses. The heartbeat of what TFC is.
It was beautiful.
It
was beautiful, yeah.
Yeah, but that was because they were like, this, thank you. Thank you. The players, MLSC will never care about you or me. But the players, if we get the players on our side, that's all we need.
And if ever we needed a 12th player, it was today.
Exactly.
Yeah. Given the lineup.
Well, and you made a good point. He says, Bradley, we need you. And it's like, then let us. Let us do what we do. And I'm speaking for, you know, we sit in 105. But even in 105, let us do what we do, which is like stand and cheer and sing and whatever. We can't do it where we are, unfortunately. We have to sit and be good. But in the South End, it's like, yeah, let us wave our flags, right? Let us stand, let us sing, let us do everything we can do.
And let us bring the stadium to a roar. I mean, that's what they
And when they do it, we follow, right? Like we see it happen all the time when they're at full tilt. Everyone wants to be a part of that.
It spills over.
A big flag, fortress. You see that on the southeast?
Yeah.
Fortress. This place hasn't been a fortress for 5 years, 6 years. And why is that? Well, we know why. Because the MLSE cuts us at the knees. Always. Every single chance they get. This is just another example. But, again, I reiterate. If we have the players on our side, perhaps it can start something. And Inebriati may be that type of group. But Inebriati seems to be able to kind of harness something different, unique. And I think that's a movement. Maybe it'll lead back to you guys sitting up and standing up. May not happen. But maybe in the playoffs, if we get a home game.
But we did see something today, or we heard something today about a new Facebook page in our section.
Yeah.
So, top
of 105.
Right. So we just want to shout that out. And if you're in 105, you should, check that out on Facebook.
There's guys at the top of 105 who are continually singing, trying to get things going. I took a picture of them too.
I don't know if you've seen it. It's the East Side Stand Up. They have a scarf that says East Side Stand Up.
Oh, cool.
It's fantastic, actually.
Yeah. So if you're in 105 or any, I guess not even on the northeast corner, top of 105 is the Facebook page. So check it out because they'll probably
it's
give you
the beginning of community building, right? It's like I think it's like something, right?
Community building. And when it first started as a team, it all became this electric spark. It was just so vibrant and carnivalesque and powerful.
Yeah.
And then I got a chance to read the lists. You're not allowed to do. And a lot of that stuff is a little vague. I mean, I have to read the rules and regulations of what being a fan is about at BMO.
Well, you don't have to because the players read it to you at the beginning of the game.
That's right, they do that. Yeah, you're right. But if you don't audibly impaired, you can read it. You can read it. And it's like a lot of the stuff that was cool about it. And right, we don't want players to be endangered. But there has to be an element of kind of this thin line. You know, like the yellow wall for Dortmund. And, you know, there's power behind that, which doesn't have to be necessarily violent. If you already start thinking things are violent, that passes on. That becomes the narrative. You know, you can't have a streamer, a little toilet bowl, because it's going to hurt somebody. And then you're automatically deemed violent conduct, you know, sanctions, et cetera, et cetera. And if that keeps happening, all you're going to have is the muting of an audience. And football's not like that.
You're right. But if I could just say it a different way, because I totally agree with what you're saying, is that I think that the emphasis on the rules and regulations of what you can't do is the wrong narrative. It's not the environment that creates optimism, cheering, becoming the 12th player. Like, it's just the wrong way to go. It's so, like, just stop emphasizing it and just give people a creative license to get behind this team because, really, they want to. And that's rare for sports franchises.
I think we should leave it at that, guys. We're at 50 minutes. Well, it's a long podcast.
Any more sights and sounds?
Dude, you edited it.
Yeah, I know. I got to edit it out. There are no sights and sounds. That was the big one. I'm going to leave it at that. I want to wrap it up. It's 50 minutes.
Was there something else? I just want to say that the songs that Inebriati were singing, there was different ones, new ones today, and I thought they were fantastic.
Everybody won pizza in the row behind me.
Did they?
Yeah, and then they shared pizza with us.
It's rare that I know anyone who does, who's ever... In fact, I think you're the first.
Yeah, there you go.
I know somebody. That's amazing. Who's like a sixth degree of separation
from the giveaway. When you get free pizza... Free pizza? Stop asking whether you have gluten-free or cheese only or anything. It's fucking free pizza. Everybody, like, they were people really nice. Other people are like, I can't have this. Free pizza. Enjoy it.
And if there's any empty seats, you should run up to that row.
Yes.
As quick as you can. All right. So, hey, we can get Andre. Andre has his Twitter. And it's up and running.
Zatarozny_Andre.
Zatarozny_Andre.
Your actual name.
Yeah.
My actual name.
His actual name.
Yeah. I was shamed by Ian. So
why? I mean.
Because he had them. He has.
Verizon is real. The NSA monitors. Oh, it's real.
It is real.
Yeah. Should have kept it with spleeps. So, and then Steve is Sunday nights at CIUT. That was his old Twitter handle. His old Twitter handle was @spleeps.
Well, I would have never...
Never would have guessed that was
now,
you.
Now, the NSA. You see, this is what happens.
Well.
When you're honest.
Okay,
you're
so...
You're on the list now.
And then Sunday, Steve is at CIUT, 89.5 on your dial.
Yes, you guessed it right.
Yeah. And he's got lots going on there.
Yeah.
Anything coming up?
Of course, yes. Tomorrow night... which is when this podcast will be up, or tomorrow day, whatever. But tomorrow night on the show, we have an interview with Zoom, who is arguably Canada's first punk band. They have the first punk single, and they're doing a reunion show next on the October 8th, a one-off show. It'll never happen again. To support a record that's just come out, and we have the whole backstory tomorrow night on our show.
Cool. And that you archive those podcasts. So if this podcast goes up on Monday, they can still get it.
At equalizingxdistort.blogspot.com.
Cool. Okay. And everyone knows I'm at Clark RNO. I'll try not to get any head coach's names wrong this week. Obviously mistakes.
But no promises.
Yeah, no promises. we have that like little sidebar section called corrections. It was Jim Mora, not Tony,
I think it
not
be
Tony
called
Dungy.
Faux pas.
Yeah,
and I think you should come to expect it.
Yeah. that was funny. All right, so we're on international break, guys, so the next game will be Montreal.
I've put my foot in my mouth many times on this podcast.
And I'm in Europe. I'm going to be visiting the Dutch for a few weeks, but I'll be back for the last game of the season. That's when you'll hear from us again on the podcast. So hopefully everything goes our way against Montreal. And the last game of the regular season will be against Chicago on a Sunday, the 23rd. I'll be back for that. So thanks for listening, guys, and we'll catch you then.
It'll be fan appreciation night, thanks to Kia. So MLSE is taking all the recognition for Kia giving away 10,000 free tukes.
Amazing. All right, guys. Thanks a lot. Catch you next time. We want you to get involved. Reach out to us on Twitter at Red Nation Online or by email at info or have your say at rednationonline.ca. Get in touch with us. Let us know how you thought the team did. Agreed, disagreed. It doesn't matter. Also, check out our other podcasts on Red Nation Online, From the Black Hole, Ours is the Fury, and our interview series. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you guys next time.